Welcome back to Beside the Point podcast with your hosts, Dallin and Parker. We're here, episode 2 of season 2.
Here we are. You guys all didn't think we'd make it to season 2, episode 2. So shout out to all the haters.
Yeah, we showed you all wrong. Shout out to the haters, shout out to the believers. Parker, we've both been up to some fun business recently. We both went on some trips since last episode.
It's true. Dallin was in the great Big Apple, and I was in probably as opposite as you can get from that trip, right?
Yeah,
I was in the
exactly.
middle of nowhere in the mountains, surviving in grizzly bear country, so pretty crazy.
Mm-hmm. Pretty awesome. And I was thinking about this. I feel like travel is just such a good way to widen your perspective. I feel like whenever you come back from visiting somewhere, you're able to see the familiar things with a different lens. Do you agree?
Man, 30 seconds into the podcast, we're getting philosophical here, guys. No, I would agree with that. Like, I think that perspective is an interesting thing, and we tend to get into a routine. You know, it's like you go to New York and mm-hmm. you come back to Salt Lake City, and all of a sudden, you know, $6-7 for lunch doesn't seem so bad anymore, you know?
No, honestly, it's like, it is so interesting. I like that me and you and our friends, we all kind of like traveling and seeing new things. I just think it's a valuable thing. And I've been reading a book. It's about creativity, but it involves a lot of like mental perspective. And that's one of the things that I've been thinking about, is just finding ways in your daily life where you don't need to travel, but it can still widen your perspective. And I hope all the listeners today can get their perspective widened through our podcast today.
Just listen to some new music, maybe some genres you've never heard about before, maybe some artists you've never seen before. Honestly, like, you probably have heard all the people that we're going to talk about today, but it's just fun to hear, I think, what people are listening to. And that's what I love about like the music community, is talking to people about what they're passionate about and like seeing their eyes light up when they're talking about their favorite artists, their favorite music, their favorite songs. It's just fun, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's music's one of the things that really can just bring people together, which is why so many people love it. And with that, Parker, let's head into our first segment, Track of the Week. What's your track of the week, Parker?
What a great segue.
Track of the Week.
All right, so I'm going to get this track. I'm going to keep the track on theme with our episode today. If you've read the title,
know
we're talking about live music. And mm-hmm. one of my favorite bands, I would say top 10 for sure, top 5 even maybe bands of mine, Bleachers, Jack Antonoff.
Nice.
The Crew. Seen them three times live.
A mutual shared favorite
flex.
Band.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. How many times have you seen Bleachers live, Dal? Three?
Four.
Four.
Four wow. times.
Dang, now I feel like a loser. Jeez.
Yep.
No, yeah. Bleachers is one of those bands where every show you feel like is like a one-on-one, you know, with Jack Antonoff. Like,
mm-hmm.
it just feels like you connect with the band really well. And so they played at Radio City in New York, where Dallin was. He sadly did not go.
Oh, yeah.
But they posted a few live videos and a couple of, you know, recordings. And so they actually released a full live album of their entire set. It is a hour and a half set, so pretty standard. Their most recent album has been Take the Sadness Out of Saturday Night, but
mm-hmm.
you know, they're working on some new stuff. We know that there's been rumors of a new album potentially coming soon. Maybe Dallin, do you want to kind of inform the viewers of what that rumors have been?
I mean, yeah, we know that he's been in the studio. We know that he's working on something. When they dropped this live album, he said, okay, this is like our last little present to the fans before the next era. So this is like the end of Take the Sadness Out of Saturday Night. But
Exactly.
it should be really exciting. I mean, I've loved the trajectory they've been going. Like, I this is a hot take among our friends, but I think they've improved with each album. So I think Take the Sadness Out of Saturday Night is the best Bleachers album so far. So I'm really excited to see where they go.
Yeah, and I mean, that's an interesting take. You know, I definitely am the type where I love their old nostalgic music. I can't get enough of that. I think their new sound has been
mm-hmm.
very new and very interesting, and like I love the way that they're going. Nothing's going to be Gone Now for me personally. But anyway, the song I wanted to talk about off of this live album is part of a clip that they released on YouTube. and it is Everybody Lost Somebody, one of my favorite Bleachers songs. They did
Oh
kind of
yeah.
a double, it's like a 9-minute clip on YouTube where they have Everybody Lost Somebody plus Good Morning.
Oh
But
yeah.
Everybody Lost Somebody is just such a great song, and I love like the intro portion, so I'm just gonna play that for you guys right now.
How you feeling out there, New York? It was true years ago. I've been saying it my whole life, and now I'm saying it again. It's more true after what we've been through. This song is called Everybody Lost Somebody, and this goes out to every fucking person in this building.
All right, so there's the first kind of 45 seconds of that piece, but man, it's so fun, and I love his energy, and I love his emotion, and just he's like, we wrote this song a while ago, but it's still true to today that, you know, everybody's had somebody in their life that has left their life, but like it doesn't mean that your life is over and you can move on. And so it's a song of hope, a song of redemption, a song of nostalgia, and I love it. I love that intro.
It's so awesome. That's one of the songs where when I saw them for the first time, like that was a song that had never stood out to me particularly, but watching it live was like, I remember like that was the one where I was just the most awestruck, maybe of the whole concert, of just like, oh, this is some real emotion in this music. Like, this is a raw experience. Yeah. And Good Morning is so good too. Like, oh,
Yeah.
the whole live album that they released is just, it's fire. Because it's fun because they have an old live album, the MTV Unplugged, which is kind of a more chill thing with a small crowd. And then they have the Electric Lady Studios, which is all just kind of acoustic from their new album. And so it's fun to have a live album of where you can feel the energy and you can hear the crowd response of just this, you know, you can feel the emotion between the band and the crowd just working together. It's so cool.
Exactly. Yeah, and shout out to Jack Antonoff for getting married this year. Big news.
Yeah. Shout out for getting married. And interestingly, I saw that this live album is released under Dirty Hit, which is the 1975's record label. They used to be under
Yeah.
Columbia. So interesting that I'm curious to see what that leads to in the future as well.
Yeah, so screw Columbia and let's go on to your song, Don.
Oh yeah. Okay, I'm doing a classic that most of the listeners are probably gonna know. As we mentioned, I visited New York, and you could say I was in a New York state of mind, as
Oh
they say.
no. Oh no.
So this is actually a song. So it first of all, New York, it blew me away, the city itself. Like I haven't been to a city that big and just been able to roam around for a really long time. So it really was like a different mindset that it got me into. I was there for 4 days, and just throughout the time where you're seeing so many different people coming and going, and you know, there's so many iconic places and buildings, it really was just a cool thing. And it wasn't until my flight home that I'm like, maybe I should give New York State of Mind by Billy Joel a listen. So I'll talk a little bit more about it, but
By
let's play a
Billy
little
Joel.
clip.
Okay, I was confused there for a second because there's like a
Oh,
lot of different, right?
yeah.
There's the Alicia Keys Empire State of Mind, and
Yeah,
then there's
with
also
Jay-Z, yeah.
the Nas NY State of Mind. And so I'm like, all right, he's
Yeah.
gonna pull out some hip hop. No, we're going way back, guys.
No, we're going back.
Original.
1976. 1976, Billy Joel released New York State of Mind on his album Turnstiles. So let's play a clip.
Let's hear it.
Some folks like to get away, take a holiday from the neighborhood. Hop a flight to Miami Beach or to Hollywood. But I'm taking a Greyhound on the Hudson River line. I'm in a New York state of mind.
So, great song, first of all. So like I said, I listened to that on the plane ride home as I'm leaving New York. I mean, you mentioned the Alicia Keys, Jay-Z, Empire State of Mind, which I heard all the time. The people who like ride the bikes and let the couples like ride in the little carriage in the back, they would always be blasting that through their speakers. So
I definitely you mean when you let them take you in the back of the carriage.
No, I'm not paying for that
in New York.
But no, New York State of Mind, I mean I listened to this song back in like junior high. It was the last time I remember consciously putting this song on, because that was back when I took actual piano lessons, and that was one of the songs I was learning with my piano lessons. And
fun.
Looking back, I can see why I gave up piano lessons, because this is a very difficult, tricky, like cool sounding song on the piano. Like, I love just the jazziness, and just you can hear the emotion of the song come through before the singing even comes in. The singing comes in after a full like repetition of the verse and chorus just played by piano. So I thought that was really cool. But overall, just like the lyrics got me thinking, not just about New York, I'm not gonna keep harping on that, but that the attachment that a person can have to a specific place and the very specific things about it. I mean, even in the Bleachers Live album, when they play Chinatown, he brings out Bruce Springsteen, because they're both from New Jersey, and like they talk about, you know, how the feeling of New Jersey and the specific emotions that you can have being from New Jersey and growing up there. And so it just really is interesting to me, you know, in New York State of Mind, he mentions like specific locations or, you know, rivers and things that you can do in New York, and just emphasizes why that's where he wants to be. Like, that's the state of mind he wants to be in. And I just think that's a cool idea, that you can become so attached to a place that even the quote unquote mundane parts of it like fill you with this like sense of nostalgia and like this swelling emotion that you can write a whole grand song about it, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, maybe, like, I don't know the song too well, but I love how influential 70s, 80s, especially like pop and mm-hmm. that type of like genre of music has become for especially the hip hop community, you know? I mean, you can search New York State of Mind on Spotify and then scroll down an entire page of different hip hop artists who have made their own type of rendition or like inspiration from this song. And it just goes to show, like, you know, Billy Joel is like an incredible artist and somebody who has been so influential in all of these different types of communities, but then also mm-hmm. how, you know, New York as a city and as a music center of the world is also so influential. And mm-hmm. how cool is that you got to go experience that, you know? I mean, it would be cool if you could like see a concert in person there or something. I know you're only there for like 2 or 3 days, but
yeah,
I mean, Broadway, sports, music, like this is like the hub of all of those things that are cultural.
It really is. And it's like, I definitely want to go back and visit there, because it really did blow me away. But we were there Monday through Thursday, and we were looking up like stuff to go to, music related, you know, clubs or jazz clubs or something. And everything opens Friday to Sunday is when all the things are. And we were there just exactly the wrong days. But, you know, that's how it goes. But it was a good time. It was fun. I mean, I walked past Radio City Music Hall, like you said, right?
Oh, great.
Where they recorded that Bleachers live album. So it was fun. It was cool. Which, let's segue then into the meat of the episode. Speaking of live music, Parker, what is it about a live performance or a live recording of a performance that makes it great or iconic or that you love?
That is a great question. So last night I saw a clip of Eminem, and he was on stage and just saying like, you know, this song that I'm about to sing is, you know, so influential to me and it's been such an important part of my career, and like the person who's about to come on stage and sing it with me has been so important. And then he has Dido come on, mm-hmm. and so for the rest of the day today I've been listening to Dido, and he, you know, she sings that song where it's like, the tea's gone cold, I wonder why, you know?
Yeah.
And it was interesting because then I started to think, I'm like, okay, well, what drives somebody like Dido or someone like Eminem to want to continue to have like these long careers that they've had and to be performing on stage. Like, so I'm thinking, I'm like, if I'm Dido and I blew up like she did in the early 2000s, I'd be set for the rest of my life money-wise, and then I could just coast on that money and just like never touch a microphone again. But these artists like are continuing to perform and like be connected to their crowds, because I feel like they love the energy and they love the community and they love the emotion that surrounds their music. And for them, it's more than a job, you know, like for good artists who are timeless, they get on stage and they're performing because they love it so much and because they love that energy. And obviously like they want the money, but I mean, the money, I think for a lot of those people is an afterthought. And so to your question of like, what is so special about a live performance? I think it's the artist has a chance to portray that emotion in real time and like put it into their music and like show people that they really know and care about what they're talking about. And then for the audience to that then experience that firsthand and to see that emotion play out. And so for me, one of my favorite parts of a live performance is seeing the emotional connection between the singer and between the audience.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with, like, I think that is the crux of a live performance. Because, I mean, that's the reason that they exist, you know, is for the audience to be able to connect on an emotional and physical level to the artist that they know the music of. And even if you're hearing the music for the first time or seeing the artist for the first time, it's like there's a connection there and an energy there that you can't get from just listening to it, you know, just listening to the regular song. You might get a different emotion and be able to use it for a different thing, but there's something very special about live music. I agree. Exactly. I mean, last week we were talking about the Mac Miller Tiny Desk near the end of the episode, where he, you know, the NPR Tiny Desk concerts are all really nice and have that intimate feeling to them, you know, and that's a certain kind of emotion that ties the people, the small crowd of people watching that and the artist playing in there. There's an emotion that ties those two together. And then there's Taylor Swift playing the Eras Tour right now, where it's just arena, the biggest arenas in the world, and she's selling them out and having this connection with that many people. And like that energy has got to be crazy too. So it's interesting.
Yeah. Which, I mean, side note, the Eras Tour is on track to become the first $1 billion tour ever.
Holy cow. That's crazy. So crazy.
And that she's just announced, from what I heard, that it's going to continue into 2024. So
really?
Yeah.
I mean, they've got to have that so dialed in. Like, there's got to be so many people involved with that production that when there's that many people willing to go and that want to go, it's like, as long as she can keep it up, like I don't see a reason why you would stop, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the only bottleneck there is going to be her physically even like being capable of singing
exactly
night overnight. And I don't know how she does it, because I've seen some of those. We've never been in person. Like, Dallin and I have never seen Taylor Swift in person, but those concerts, like, we've seen clips and the energy and like the emotion that she puts in and like the time between costume changes even is just insane. Like, it is like athlete level physical demanding.
Honestly, or like the one that she played in the hometown where it was raining and she played through the whole 3-hour set in the rain. It's just like, it really is dedication. Like, I respect her for that, definitely. It's cool stuff. But like, we've never seen Taylor Swift live. I'm sure a lot of our listeners have, and that they would say that that's their favorite live performance of all time. But what we're going to discuss today is some of our favorite live performances that we've not necessarily been to, but that have been recorded, put on the internet, and that we can consume and share and continue to talk about long after they've happened. So, Parker, how about you hit us with a performance that you love?
Awesome. So, live performances, like Dallin said, come in a lot of different shapes and sizes. Obviously, there's the small, intimate NPR Tiny Desk concert all the way up to the Eras Tour. One I wanted to touch on just here first at the beginning is, there was an SNL performance a long time ago. This was 8 years ago. So this was before To Pimp a Butterfly came out. The first and only single from To Pimp a Butterfly was I. Actually, did they release All Right as a single or King Kunta, one of those two?
I think there were a couple more. I can't remember which ones. But
well, yeah, so definitely.
But like, it was the first one
of the singles. And it was the first single, and it was also interesting because I came out and it was like in studio version when it was released as a single, and then the album version was different. I'm pretty sure you were going to say that, but
yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah. And so, anyway, here's an SNL clip of Kendrick Lamar playing I. I'm just going to kind of skip in, and obviously, like, you guys can't see this in person, but go look it up. 8 years ago, SNL, and I'm just going to kind of paint the scene for you, though. So Kendrick Lamar is wearing a white shirt. His hair is kind of tied back in this, crazy fashion, and he's got these black contact lenses in, and it's kind of meant to represent, like, the minstrel shows back in the, you know, the days of segregation and slavery, where white people would dress up as black people, or they would have different, like, cartoons that were racist, and they would be, you know, circulated. And so he moves a lot like those kind of early figures were moving in these performances. Just kind of, I don't know necessarily the details of why he's doing what he's doing, but it creates a really interesting picture, because the song I contrasts what he's doing in the sense of, well, it's a song of redemption and a song of self-love and motivation and unity. Getting over all of these feelings of hate and self-doubt that he's had throughout the entire album. And so I'm just going to kind of cut in the middle and just play a little clip for you guys. But anyway, go ahead and watch the show yourself. It was really good, just around 4 minutes. So here we go. Show go me a still smile. I love myself. When you're looking at me, tell me what do you see? I love myself. I put a bullet in the back of the head of the police. I love myself. Illuminated by the hand of God, but don't be shy. I love myself. One day at a time, sun gon' shine. Everybody hit me. All right, so that was
So Money
by Kendrick Lamar. So much emotion. I mean, like, he is just drenched in sweat this whole time, because, like, he is just moving and grooving and jiving, background singers, got live guitar. I mean, it is, like, such an awesome performance and such a great intro to what To Pimp a Butterfly was going to be.
Yeah, which, I mean, it is so crazy that that's the first glimpse that the public had to that album, because it's almost like spoilers for the trajectory, the, like, narrative of the album.
Yeah.
Like, knowing what the end is. But that live performance, I mean, I don't know how hot of a take this is, but for me, like, the quintessential way to listen to that song, like, narratively with the album, that's the way I enjoy listening to it the most, is that SNL performance, because he has the added verse at the end where he,
I've been looking for you my whole life, an appetite.
Yeah, exactly. Which is that verse. I mean, I could go on and on, but that verse is used in Mama halfway through the album, right after he gets the inspiration of, oh, I can bring these lessons back to my hometown and tell them to my friends and make a change. And so that's where you hear that little glimpse of that verse. And then when in this performance of I, that's a part of it. It's like, it brings the whole thing full circle. It's just, and there's so many cool little details in that performance too, which I think this is an important thing to talk about, is you mentioned his dancing and his movement, his costume. Like, that's such an important part of a live performance, is how you're moving, what you choose to put on stage, how you decide to move on stage, because that's what's going to transmit a lot of that energy. And even down to the details of, like, on the instruments of the background players, they have little handkerchiefs that are either red or blue, like, signifying the different gang colors. But then it's the song about unity and coming together and setting aside the differences. It's so cool.
Interesting. Yeah, I actually did not pick up on that detail, so that's cool.
Yeah, it took me about 17 watches till I noticed that.
Awesome. Yeah, go ahead, darling. What is your live performance that you want to touch on?
So I want to touch on one going along with that, where it's so important, the stage presence of the performer. I mean, as we were preparing for this episode, I'm thinking, like, okay, like, what are, like, who are the best performers? Like, what, who brings an energy that is just unmatched? And instantly, Michael Jackson comes to mind, because, like, maybe the quintessential performer that in recent history, you know? So, but I was thinking, like, okay, he has his, like, his ginormous shows where he, like, or, like, the This Is It, like, documentary, where it's the show that never came to fruition because he died before it happened. But but I was, like, looking through a few, and the one that really struck me as just super awesome is when he debuts the moonwalk for the first time. It's on like some TV show, I don't know, but in 1983, I'll send you the clip because you got to watch this.
Okay.
It's so awesome. I'll set this scene for the listeners, and then I'll play a clip from it. But so it's him, and he's standing kind of in front of a little staircase, and the thing is, it's just him. He's in a sparkly suit. He has the glove, but it's just him. No band members on stage. No like extra colorful lights. It's just him on stage with one spotlight. And as soon as the music starts and he starts dancing, you can just hear the crowd go crazy. You can hear the energy in the room from just one individual. So play close and do that. Okay, I guess I lied. I guess you can see some of the band, but you don't even notice them because your eyes are on Michael. Like, it's just his dancing. Like, I don't know if there's a better singer-dancer combo that we've ever had in pop music. Do you think?
He's so smooth. He's so smooth with that. I mean, like, even his movements seem so robotic and so just, like, calculated, and they're so crisp. It's like foot
yeah,
down.
Yeah, just and so deliberate. Move. Just
yeah.
Like, he hits every single beat and every single, like, little drum hit. He'll, like, do a little, oh, right along with it. It's so sweet. But I just love that where, like, in the instrumental part where he does the moonwalk, like, you just hear the crowd, like, wah! Like,
they're like, what did I just witness?
Like, what? Yeah. Exactly. And, like, if you go in the comments, it's a bunch of people just being like, I remember when I watched this on TV, I was just silent in awe, just like crazy. All this stuff, you know, everybody exaggerates in the comments, but it's still fun to see. Like, it's just, I don't know, like, I think he's an important person to talk about when we're talking about live performance, just because, like, it is a performance, you know, like, it's a deliberate, you're making deliberate choices to bring that energy to an audience, because you can be a good musician and you can play songs really well, but there is definitely a huge added layer when you're making it a performance where you're sharing it as a piece of art, basically, to an audience. And I just think that Michael being able to bring that energy to a relatively small crowd with just him on stage with one spotlight instead of all these like bells and whistles is just, it's just too cool.
Yeah, I mean, you can just feel, like you were talking about, the audience's energy. Everyone's like losing their minds. I mean, it's kind of like the Eras Tour idea where people go from around the world to see him. And then there's one scene where it cuts to the view of the crowd. And it is like, I mean, it looked like he was almost in some sort of, I don't know, man, like opera house or something like that. I mean, there's like just like rows of people all up.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was like they were filming, it's like some TV something. And so it's like, it's not like a big arena, it is like kind of like a little opera house or like a theater.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, it's, and like it's, you were saying, awesome. I mean, you don't really even notice the band, like everyone's eyes are just glued. And as he moves across the stage, they've got like the spotlights like moving with him. I mean, like it is obvious. This is the reason why you're here.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, he's iconic. Rest in peace, Michael Jackson. But Parker, how about you hit us with another one?
Well, let's keep talking about stage presence. And yeah, me and Dallin are going to each kind of touch on two performances here. So yeah, this will be my last one, but, talking about stage presence and somebody who is just like an icon, like Michael Jackson, I want to talk about Tyler, the Creator, just because he is such an icon in today's world. This is the 2021 Lollapalooza performance. Whole thing is uploaded to YouTube. It's an hour and a half. And this was right after Call Me If You Get Lost got dropped. Great album. I think me and Dallin have talked quite a bit about his discography and what we like, and, you know, definitely talked about his past before, but for me, Call Me If You Get Lost is one of those albums that I still keep going back to this day. It's 2 years later, and he just released The Estate Sale, which is a deluxe version, but he's just got an insane stage performance. And I'm going to go ahead and just throw on one of my favorites from this performance. It was Who Dat Boy. Great song off of Flower Boy. But before I play it, I just want to talk about another aspect of live performance that I think is really important, and that is the props and the set and all of the orchestration that goes into like what things look like. And also, one of the things that I think Tyler, the Creator, is the best at, or one of the best at nowadays, is costume. So throughout the performance, he is dressed as a bellhop when the intro comes in and it's going into Corso. He comes out dressed like a bellhop and he's pushing the the wagon with all of the suitcases on it. And then at one point in the performance, like, he gets into an entire speedboat and the boat is moving up and down. Like, it is just some of the best stage production that I've ever seen. I don't know if you have anything to add to that.
I mean, yeah, I definitely agree. Just like the stage, like the actual setup and the lights and the props, like that really can add so much to a live performance where, you know, if there's a story to it, it just like, I feel like it presents it more as a piece of art. Like, oh, this is performance art that I'm giving to the crowd rather than just someone playing music. I agree.
All right, so gonna play Who Dat Boy for you guys.
I don't agree that Tyler, the Creator, is as much of an icon as Michael Jackson, though.
That's fair. Good throw out there. I think MJ for sure was more influential, but for hip hop, I think Tyler's pretty up there.
He's up there.
So, if you guys want to, cut to the timestamp in this performance, it is at 36 minutes, and Tyler loses his absolute mind in this performance. I mean, he's like trying to bash his head on the floor. I swear, I don't know, it's crazy. Anyway, let's check it out.
Explicit warning, by the way. Yo! Shop at the mall, all y'all just some dumb motherfuckers. I'm a goddamn owl. Now you can give me some mouthers and I'll show you a closet. And you know that it's golf, it's gonna make the deposit. Nigga fresh to death like he got dressed in a
crazy.
It's just like, no, that's one of the songs. Like, I mean, I love all the memes of once it explodes, just like Tyler, the Creator effing explodes on stage or something like that. And just as soon as that drop hits and all the pyrotechnics just go off, just flames shooting from the ground and he's screaming, the bass is going crazy. Like, that is a moment right there.
Oh my gosh. That part gives me chills, dude. It is crazy. So the scene is black and there's like these faint green lights kind of pulsing on his skin. And then he just goes, Who Dat Boy? And then the fire explodes everywhere and he just runs all over the stage, like left and right. He's bashing his head all over the place. Like, he's just like insane. And I love it.
She goes ballistic. And that's another thing where it's like, I mean, we said this with Michael Jackson, where he's just commanding the stage. Like, that's the word for it. He's commanding the attention. Like, there's nowhere else to look, but just feel the energy from this one person on the stage. Like, it's so, it's impressive. It's so cool. And just all the different parts are working together to bring that crazy moment. It's so cool.
That's the one that Dallin and I need to see live one day.
I know. That's definitely
never comes to Salt Lake. Dude.
Ah! It's so frustrating.
Don't make us fly to Denver, dude. Come on over here.
Hopefully the next album cycle, he'll realize Salt Lake is the place to be. And and we'll be able to go see him. Or we'll travel and go see him. One of the two.
All right, Dal. Do you have another one for us?
I'm going to hit you with this last one. This one's kind of a little wild card, okay? I don't know if you've heard this one or even know about it. But so we've talked about it a little before. So we both lived in South America for a while. I lived in Argentina. And there's a lot of things that, like, common motifs from the different parts I lived in. But one of the constant things that I experienced in each one of the places I lived in Argentina was hearing and watching this specific live performance. Okay, I'm gonna send it to you, but it's the band Soda Stereo, or Soda Stereo, and the song De Música Ligera. And so this song, Soda Stereo is an Argentine rock band from like the 80s, is when they formed, and they've kind of achieved just legend status within Argentina. And there's a lot of cool stuff to say about them, but like they're very influential within like Latin rock music, I guess. But this performance, I saw and heard seriously the countless times during my time there, because I mean they love it. they love it. Like if you, the official music video has less than half the amount of views that this does, which this has, this live performance has 280 million views on YouTube. Oh my gosh. Like that is a next level. But this is going to bring me to talk about one last performance. We've kind of touched on it, but one aspect of live performance that I think is so important. So, I mean, I'll set the stage for this show too. It's, he starts by singing, he has his guitar, it's Gustavo Cerati is his name, and he's up on the stage and he's singing just like the beginning of the song. This is their last concert before they broke up for a long time. Then they had a reunion tour or whatever. So this is their last song of the show. So it's like this is a big moment. But he starts, and then right as he gets to the chorus, he just cuts out all the sound, and you just hear the entire crowd singing the chorus of the song. And then he comes in with the guitars. But what I think is so cool, well, okay, we'll play a clip, then I'll get into it. So what I want to touch on with this performance, so I mean, it's just like, it's a fun song and they're playing it great, you know, he's singing good, but what I think is so important for live performance is the audience's participation, or at least like investment in the performance itself. Because I mean, I can be an old head and just complain about people being on their phones at concerts again, like I've done probably 17 million times on this podcast, but like there just is something so special about people being so dialed in and present with a musical performance like that. And you watch this performance and it is a massive crowd. It's just an ocean. And they are all jumping in unison. They're all just everybody all together, arms around each other, like arms in the air. It's just, it's honestly beautiful. And like the, whenever it cuts to like the wide shot camera, like it's like shaking because the people are jumping around it. It's just, it's so fun to see. And so that's the last point I wanted to make, is just, I think crowd participation is so valid when it's a group of people that are all invested in the same performance. They're all there for the same reason. They're all just fully invested in it. I don't know. It's so cool. It's just so cool.
And I mean, like that view of just heads bobbing all together with like not a phone in sight is sadly something that we will never see in our lives, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we've been to 1975 performances and Matty Healy loves to do his little, put your phones down, we're going to have one song without phones. And like without exception, there's always like 5% of the crowd that still has their phones up and everybody always gets mad at them. But I mean, say what you will about that, but it's just a little bit sad that we'll never be able to experience that, you know?
Mm-hmm. 'Cause there just is something about being present, and it goes past just being, it goes past concerts, but in day-to-day life, you know, being present, being able to observe the things around you, acknowledge them for what they are and appreciate them, like that's just like a healthy practice to be into. And I think especially when you're in this euphoric transcendent moment that live music can bring you, like that is more than any other time, that's a time to be present, feel the community of other people that are also there with you. It's just, that's a magical thing. Music is a beautiful thing, man. As Mac Miller says in his Tiny Desk. Full circle.
Bringing it right back to it. And I want to ask you too, Dallin, you know, maybe like one final note, seeing that South American concert, and then you've been to Bad Bunny in Puerto Rico. How mm-hmm. would you say that you would experience a South American concert versus like, or a, like a, you know, a Latin concert versus a English concert? What are the differences
I mean, as far as Bad Bunny, it was, I mean, I don't know how much to attribute to just his status as like one of the biggest artists, but like it was his hometown show. And so, and like this Soda Stereo concert, like this is their hometown show in Buenos Aires. And it's just when I was there, I mean, I'm sure people did have their phones out. I know like I filmed some stuff, but there was just this big emphasis on the community watching these people rise to fame. I think there's just more pride maybe in artists that are able to get to that level from a place like Latin America, where, I mean, most of the artists we consume are from North America. And so that's just kind of the norm. But if you're from one of these Latin countries, a lot of the worldwide stars are not from where you're from. And so the biggest people from where you're from are always going to be very special, I think.
I love it.
Which I think is so cool.
Well, that is awesome. Live performances. We are going to put a poll down in the comments and just go ahead and drop, what is your favorite live performance? Maybe it's one that you went to. Maybe it's one that you've seen on YouTube. Maybe it's one that you feel like you would love, but you haven't gone to yet. You know, just pop it down there.
Mm-hmm. And for every person that says the Eras Tour, we will take a shot of Sprite.
Wow. Up the nose.
Up the nose. And eat bananas. Do the Sprite and banana challenge.
Sprite and banana challenge through the nose, and then we'll throw up on the next podcast episode.
On the next podcast. Yeah, we'll do that for you guys. Because we love you.
All right. All right. This has been an awesome episode. Again, leave your favorite concert down in the favorite live performance down in the comments. And thanks for everyone for listening. So this has been the Beside the Point podcast. I'm Parker.
And I'm Dallin. And we will see you next time.
Take it easy.